Hello and welcome into the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markowitz, and I'm speaking today with Sean Broderick, analyst at Weiss Ratings, publisher of WealthWave and publisher of Supercycle Investor, and also publisher of Marijuana Millionaire. Sean wears many hats and covers multiple sectors, so it's always great having him on the show. And Sean, I guess we have to start off with the pullback that we're seeing across the board in commodities, but most notably, we're seeing gold get hit, we're seeing oil get hit, and we're really seeing across the board most base metals and even agricultural commodities get hit. This is coming off the back of the tension supposedly easing in the Ukraine with Russia. What's your take on it? And in specific, how are you looking at things like gold or oil now after this recent corrective move?
Yeah, well, I mean, nothing goes up in a straight line, especially in these markets. So corrective move is actually the right term. I mean, things have gone so far so fast. I've been sending some charts to my subscribers of like some of the stocks they own. And like those kind of rocket rides, they can't go on like that forever, right? I mean, it has to pull back. So that's understandable. So part is the peace noises from Russia, though frankly, I think it's more noise than action, but we'll see how it goes. I mean, hope ever springs eternal, doesn't it? And everybody wants peace, so that makes sense. Part is what's happening in China. They've locked down Shanghai and they may lock down other cities. They have another COVID outbreak, and they take them much more seriously than we do here in the U.S. So when they find COVID cases, they like freak out. They make everybody stay home until they have tests done by the men in the rubber suits, you know, that come around and all that stuff. What's more interesting is that most of the cases in China now are asymptomatic. That is, people have COVID and they don't know it. You would think that would be comforting to the Chinese. For some reason, it's not. They're freaking out even more. So we'll just have to see how that goes. But that's really weighing on things, too, because now speculators are thinking, well, if the Chinese have COVID and they're locked down, then they won't be using as much oil. They won't be using as much metal, stuff like that. So that's really weighed on prices as well. So I have to tell you, one of the biggest triggers for this pullback is that I work with a company in Japan that puts out my gold and silver trader newsletter there, which is yet another newsletter I have. I know, as you say, I wear too many hats, but they just asked me for a new report so they could promote gold and silver trader, talking about the success we've had, speak about my views on the market. Whenever I put out one of those reports, that's a signal for the market to go lower. So whatever like weight you want to put in it there. But the fact that I wrote that report, yeah, of course the market's going to go lower because it's all about me. And I am just kidding there. But seriously, that comes with such regularity whenever I do one of those things that you have to think it's part of it.
Yeah, Sean, it's kind of like if you wash your car or truck or if you wash your windows, it's guaranteed to rain. We'll make a note that if you write the gold and silver publication for Japan to take temporary profits until the correction comes through.
Yes, I should have done that. But I mean, everything in that portfolio looks good, even though we have oil positions in there. That's fine. I mean, they've had such a great run. I don't mind giving a little back. And I'm really sure that this is a temporary pullback because there are many other forces lining up that point the way to higher prices. We just got ahead of ourselves. But look at OPEC Plus, for example. We've heard President Biden asking them to please pump more because the world needs more. No. They are sticking with their adding 400,000 barrels per month, which they've been doing before. They aren't interrupting that at all. And the thing about it is they spread out this 400,000 barrels across all of OPEC, and many members of OPEC are already pumping at maximum anyway, so you don't get 400,000 barrels. For like the last 3 months in a row that they've been adding 400,000 barrels, they haven't come anywhere near that 400,000 barrel limit simply because members of OPEC can't pump more. Plus, we just saw Saudi Arabia raise the price of the oil that it sells to Asia, all kinds of oil, everything to Asia. Raise the prices. I believe Iraq followed suit after Saudi Arabia did that. So, you know, these guys are not interested at all in seeing lower prices at all. They would much rather have higher prices. And so that's going to be one of the things that's pushing prices up. Then if you look at the EIA had its latest oil inventory numbers last week, and like we were like 15% below the average range now, and we should be building. We should be building oil going into summer. This is when we should be doing it. So, you know, there's a lot of things going on there. You also have the fact that unemployment's at the lowest level since 1969, which means there's a lot more people out there working, driving to work, stuff like that. There's a lot of things that will actually be supportive of the price of oil in particular, but I could also make a good case for like gold as well. So I see this as a short-term pullback. If you were underinvested before, now's a good time to add some positions. I'm thinking about adding some because you can never have enough. And, you know, we'll see how long this correction takes. It should be over in a week to two, but, you know, we'll just have to see how it works out.
Well, Sean, you brought up some good points there because there are some structural factors behind the precious metals, the oil market, really all the commodities, whether it's inflation, whether it's supply issues from all these commodities, getting enough supply out to the market, and then obviously increasing demand in most parts of the world. Sure, even if China has a slow period here because of COVID or because their growth is slowing, there's still a big world out there that needs all these raw commodities. And when you look at commodities, the whole sector over the last 40 years, compared to other asset classes like the general equities, like bonds, like real estate, commodities have underperformed in a big way. I mean, oil and gas for the last 20 years, you'd have lost money if you'd invested in them 20 years and then held all this time. So they're just now getting ready to break out on a longer term picture. So as you just mentioned, this short term correction that we're seeing now is probably a good spot for investors to get back into positions, or if they missed the recent rise, to get positions started. So if we look at the stocks, the gold stocks or the oil stocks, are there areas that you're liking more? Are you liking the producing companies of those commodities? Are you liking the development stage companies, the exploration stage? Which ones have your attention right now?
Well, it depends on which thing you speak about, but you can't go wrong with the producers now, it seems. I mean, they all seem to be picking up steam every time this comes along. So I would concentrate on those. When you're looking at something like lithium, and again, lithium hit another high in China, which is the big market for it, right? You can use developers as well. Even though they aren't producing it, people are anticipating those companies that will be producing in the next year or two, they're getting a real serious bid as well. In things like precious metals, I hate to say it because God knows my personal portfolio has enough explorers in it, you know, but the explorers just aren't moving as well as the producers are. So you just have to take that into account. And in oil, I mean, the producers are printing money right now, right? I mean, as long as they can keep their costs under control and maintain production, that's also something to be very careful about. I try to add those oil companies that will maintain production or increase production slightly. No one's doing a big ramp up. Like, those days seem to be over. But there are those companies in the group that are either maintaining production or increasing it slightly. That's where I would put my investment dollars now because, I mean, with oil prices at recent prices, they are just making so much money. Hand over fist, you know there's going to be higher dividends. You know there's probably going to be special dividends. There's certainly going to be stock buybacks. All those things that make investors happy are definitely coming to the oil patch in this quarter.
Yeah, Sean, and another thing to make a note of with the oil patch in particular is that for a long time, the sector was in the hurt locker, and they had debt covenants that required them to have hedging on. And a lot of those hedging contracts are starting to roll off, and they were at a lot lower oil prices or natural gas prices. And now when those things roll off, they're getting the full margin spread between, you know, where they were operating and now the full price. Even if there's been a corrective move in oil and gas, they still have really fat margins. So it sounds like you're looking at growth-oriented producers, producers that can either grow their production profile, but also do you ever look at that other aspect of how their margins may be expanding if they were in that kind of a hedging contract and then have them roll off?
Funny you should mention that. Months ago, I sent my subscribers a whole list of companies that we weren't going to buy in the oil space simply because they hedged so much production. But now as those hedges roll off, I mean, if the companies are like smart enough not to add new hedges, we'll be taking fresh looks at them again. You raise a very good point there. And so, yes, some companies were definitely underperformers because they were not enjoying the full price rise in the oil space. But if they're smart enough not to add new hedges as the old ones roll off, then it might be time to start looking at them again.
Well, now just shifting back over to gold and silver, and we could even throw the base metals in here. With those production stories, they've had the reverse story. What they've had is inflation eating a little bit into their margins, whether it's the cost of labor, the cost of diesel and fuel, or the cost of lumber or cement or just steel raw materials. So they've had their margins impacted some, but still, even at these high prices, you know, silver in the mid 20s and gold in the high 1900s, they've still got to be banking it and creating a lot of revenue quarter after quarter. When will generalist investors come over to the mining sector, especially in the metals, and notice that these PE ratios are so low compared to other sectors, but they're actually printing a lot of money right now?
Yeah, well, those guys can come over just as soon as I'm loaded up as much as I need to be. But I mean, one great way to play that industry right now is with the streamers and the royalty companies. There are some newer, less well-known names in that space that, I mean, their costs are strictly controlled, aren't they? So they don't have to worry about higher wages, paying for like diesel, stuff like that. They don't have that problem. So I would look at streamers, look at royalty companies. They've been working well for us, and they'll probably continue to work well going forward.
Okay. Well, I also know, Sean, that you cover the soft commodity sector. So whether it's wheat or corn or soybeans, you've had a lot of articles coming out at WealthWave. And if people haven't gone over there to check out WealthWave, check out the link below this interview. But you've really covered a lot of these soft commodities as they've boomed. And a lot of them were booming before the war in Ukraine. And that just accelerated it. So any thoughts on any of the soft commodities that have your attention right now?
Yeah, well, I mean, when this news on potential peace in Ukraine came out that hammered the wheat contract, which went limit down. So again, if you didn't buy in the first time, if we get a decent pullback, now might be the time to buy, because yes, there's food inflation. We are seeing it ramp up all over the place. And the fact that they might eventually work out a peace deal in Ukraine does not detract from the fact that most Ukrainian farmers did not plant this year. They just are not able to get out in the fields, or they're fighting, or there's bombs landing and like stuff like that. So about half of their corn and wheat is gone. It just isn't going to come to market. Russia is having its own problems because no one will buy from them. Well, they can sell to India and China, but really it throws a wrench in the works of like the whole global market. So I think pullbacks are a chance to really get long. We just heard, I believe it was the USDA, they just said they expect food inflation to be 5% this year. They're always the last to notice any of this stuff. If anything, they're lowballing the situation. But considering last month they expected food inflation to be 3%, that shows you how fast things are changing. And if you know anyone on vacation down in Mexico, price of guacamole just hit like a 24-year high there. We are seeing food inflation all over the place. Everything from the chicken wings you buy in the store, and I know because I was doing it, to just about anything else. Food inflation is creeping up, or else they have the hidden stealthy inflation where they make the size of the packages smaller. Cadbury is making its chocolate bars smaller so that, you know, people will not notice, right, that they're actually paying more for less. So, yeah, I think food inflation is just going to be huge this year. It may have an impact on the elections because people kind of notice that thing. And, you can limit your driving. How do you really limit your eating? Though, frankly, many Americans, including me, should limit our eating. I don't know if this is going to make us skinnier, but it's probably going to make people angrier, the fact that food prices are going up. And it's a place you can invest with both the grain companies, fertilizer companies, the seed companies. There's a lot of ways to do this, and I think people should look at this space.
Yeah, I'm not sure if the inflation in food prices is going to cause me to eat less, Sean, but I'll give it a go. But you're right, shrinkflation. I just saw that they're putting less chips in the chips. They're putting smaller sodas out there. They're putting in boxed foods, less food inside the same box, charging the same price. So shrinkflation's a big part of inflation. But as far as the soft commodities, you know, there's more than just wheat, and everybody's been so wheat focused because of Russia. I know that you cover cocoa, coffee, soybeans, cotton. Is there any that really strike your fancy right now as being a sector that could keep running, and would there be an associated ETF that somebody would use to buy those?
Well, I would really like to see how far things pull back before I recommend anything in that space. But let me just take a sidestep into another agricultural commodity that you may not consider one, but really kind of bottom 2 or 3 weeks ago. We've been adding new names in the space doing pretty well, and that's cannabis. Can we talk about cannabis for a little bit? Because those stocks are picking up, and that was the most beaten down industry forever. Everyone hates it at this point, but take a look again at the U.S. multi-state operators. We're starting to see signs of life. Now, that's an industry that's actually suffering deflation. Or at least up in Canada it is, because they have too much of it up there. So they're seeing prices go down, and that will be a problem eventually in the U.S. as well. But what's changing the game there is they're making a serious push for U.S. federal legalization again. Now, the previous attempt failed, and this is due to idiots on both sides of the aisle. I could, I could call out McConnell, I could call out Schumer. Well, apparently I am. But there are people who, for various reasons, hate cannabis. And Joe Biden doesn't like it, despite his campaign promises to the contrary that he would legalize it. He's done nothing for it. But there is a group of congressmen and senators on both sides of the aisle who are coming together and defying the leadership to try and get legalization done. And I believe that's what's really put the bid into these stocks right now, besides the fact that many of them are bargains. I mean, when you look at some of these stocks, I mean, they just look cheap. When you look at something like Verano, or certainly Trulieve looks cheap, you know, certainly Green Thumb Industries looks cheap. These are companies, I mean, we talk about the oil companies printing money at this point, right? These cannabis multi-state operators, they just have it coming in over the transom, and they can't use the banking system yet. I mean, the federal banking system, that's another bill that's trying very hard to get passed, and I believe that's one of the reasons why cannabis stocks are starting to pick up, is because they think that one has an even better chance of like passing. But we are talking about companies that have to keep cash in warehouses because they can't use the federal banking system. And so there are real opportunities for change in that industry within the next 6 months, maybe even sooner than that, that could be a game changer for them. And so that's one agricultural industry that I think people should look at. All that said, I believe growing marijuana is a money-losing proposition when federal legalization comes along, because you know there's going to be some farmer in like Alabama or in Indiana or someplace like that, that can grow it cheaper than any of these big cannabis companies. And so if they try and grow it themselves, they will learn the hard lesson that the companies up in Canada did, that there's always someone who can grow it cheaper than you. And so these big, fancy, expensive greenhouses they built will be a real albatross around their necks. But what's happening in the legalization game is really putting some excitement there. And I think people should look at that.
Well, Sean, those are some cogent thoughts from someone that writes the Marijuana Millionaire's Letter. And I think it's interesting what's happening in the U.S. because it's kind of where Canada was a couple of years ago as far as the legalization front. And I have seen some of that legislature bills moving through where they're going to be voting on it. So some people play the space not with individual names, but with ETFs. And I'm glad you threw out a few individual names. But for example, I've been in the ETF PODX, P-O-T-X, and MJ for Mary Jane. But they don't have as much U.S. focus, and several people on our blog have brought up the ETF MSOS because of its U.S. focus. Because of this legalization topic, would you think that if someone's playing it using ETFs, that that would be the better one to use, that MSOS, or do you have any other ETFs you'd recommend?
Well, here's the thing. MSOS is probably a better choice than MJ longer term anyway, because though right now MJ is outperforming MSOS, there's actually kind of a funny story about that. So let's just take 5 minutes to talk about that. All right. People have to accept Wall Street is stupid. Okay. They are trying to invest in the sector and they don't know what they're doing. So they say, oh, MJ, that's the biggest ETF. Let's throw money at it. So they do. But most of the stocks in it, in fact, pretty much all the big names, are Canadian cannabis stocks. And that market is very limited compared to the U.S. market. I mean, the U.S. market is much, much bigger. MSOS only buys U.S. multi-state operators and also other ancillary stocks, you know, stocks that have something to do with the U.S. market. It's really U.S. market focused. And so longer term, I think that's going to be very good for MSOS. I think that they have some real potential there. It's been going sideways for over a week now. Maybe there's going to be a breakout. It's still in a downtrend. So you have to understand that. What I'm speaking about is the breakout in the individual names that I've been looking at. Ones like Trulieve, for example, they look pretty darn good right here. Yeah, that looks like a double bottom for sure. And so that's the kind of thing I would want to be in, as opposed to MSOS, which has been going sideways for now and hasn't broken its downtrend yet. That doesn't mean it can't. And longer term, I think there's more potential in MSOS than there is in MJ. But Wall Street, they have the big money. They're really focused on everything else. They think we need a little cannabis exposure just in case things go right. So they put money in MJ. So take that for what you will. You know, I just don't see the big potential in MJ that I do in MSOS, but I believe the individual names really have the big potential. That said, things can go seriously wrong at like one cannabis stock that can sink the stock. So make sure you're in a cannabis stock that's spread over as many states as possible, because just in case one state, for example, gets the wrong governor, that could be a real problem for them. So keep that in mind as well.
That's good advice, Sean. It's always good to have diversification, not just in companies in your basket, but also in jurisdiction, so that if one of the areas has an issue, they've got a multi-jurisdictional approach. And if people want to get more of Sean's thoughts on the cannabis sector, definitely check out Marijuana Millionaires. Of course, he has his Wealth Wave publication, his Super Cycle Investor, and then obviously our buddies over at Weiss Ratings. Always check on them because they do ratings on companies and give you a thumbs up or a thumbs down on it based on a number of criteria they measure. So Sean, always great having you on the show. Always great getting your insights on all these different commodities markets and just the macro backdrop and the economic situation. And looking forward to our next conversation in a couple of weeks.
Okay, great. So always talking to you too.